Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to be with you. Wherever you're listening in Southern California, or listening worldwide on the KPECC smartphone app or streaming at kpecc.org. Coming up next hour, it's Film Week. We have a lot of movies to talk about. It's a particularly good week for documentaries, including one on Netflix, What Would Sophia Loren Do? Fun documentary. Also HBO Max with a new pandemic set crime comedy, Lockdown, starring Anne Hathaway and Chiwetel Ejiofor, the film directed by Doug Liman, who's known for action-oriented films. Lockdown on HBO Max. We'll hear what our critics think about it coming up on Film Week in less than an hour. But right now, we pick the ball up from NPR's hourly newscast to continue focusing on the plans for the inauguration on Wednesday. By the way, our coverage from NPR begins at 8 o'clock here in Southern California. Coverage scheduled from 8 until at least 10 o'clock. Air Talk will follow the inauguration at 10 or later because, as you know, with special events like this, they don't necessarily end on schedule. So we will be coming on as soon as NPR's coverage concludes at approximately 10 o'clock. Joining us to talk about what's to come on Wednesday and the preparations being made, as well as the latest on the criminal investigations into the rioters and insurrectionists who were at the U.S. Capitol 10 days ago, is Anna Edgerton, politics editor for Bloomberg. Thank you so much, Anna, for joining us today. Let's talk first of all about the preparations for the inauguration. It's an extraordinary show of law enforcement that we expect. What's the latest in the planning?
Yeah, the inauguration was always going to be different this year because of the coronavirus. You know, we were already expecting a lot of the usual events to be virtual, a much smaller crowd at the Capitol building. But now that's gone to even more extreme measures with some of the security precautions that are being taken. The Capitol building right now looks like a fortress. I believe there are more National Guard troops stationed in Washington, D.C. than there are in Iraq and Afghanistan combined. So that just goes to show you kind of how militaristic it feels. One of my colleagues is a former Marine, and he said getting to the Capitol building yesterday was like trying to enter the Green Zone in Baghdad.
Wow. The Associated Press reports from a source, and I don't know whether you folks at Bloomberg have confirmed this or not, but that President Trump has apparently told people close to him he'll be leaving the White House Wednesday morning before the inauguration. He'll be leaving town. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, we did report that last night that Trump plans to leave Wednesday morning to go to his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida. And that appears to be his future home base, including him and a few close aides and some of his family members.
And then Mike Pence will be attending the inauguration. That's still the plan?
Yes, that's right. Mike Pence will be there. Ivanka Trump at one point had said she might consider going, but she is planning to be in Florida with her father that day.
Now, I understand that federal prosecutors in a filing against some of those who've been arrested for the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, in those filings have said that the intent of the Capitol rioters was to capture and assassinate elected officials of the United States government. Very chilling that this is part of the filing. And can you give us a sense of what the mood is in political Washington, D.C., with these kinds of reports?
Yeah, as more details come out via court filings and some of the investigations and footage that we see from the day, it just becomes more disturbing with every detail that we get. I was on the street Wednesday talking to some of the protesters, and some of them described in very graphic terms what they wanted to do to lawmakers, not just Democrats, but to Republicans, too, who they felt had betrayed President Trump. I mean, describing really graphic ways that they wanted to kill members of Congress. So, looking back on those conversations after the insurrection just kind of took on a whole different meaning for me. And, you know, as we see, some of the notes that were left for Pence once he evacuated the chamber, the Senate chamber, and then came back, you see that there were very kind of specific plans in place to find lawmakers, to hold them hostage, to do them harm. And there is a lot of fear among members of Congress and their staff that, you know, this could return, you know, that next time the people who participate in this insurrection will return with more guns, with, maybe not the same number of people, but with more heavily armed kind of, informal militias that are trying to follow up on Wednesday's events.
We're talking with Anna Edgerton, politics editor for Bloomberg. We'll continue with her in a moment, but want to bring into the conversation security analyst Hal Kempfer, the CEO of Global Risk Intelligence and Planning, retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel. Hal, it's good to have you back with us today. You're reading these filings, the federal charges, this particularly a filing against the man who wore the the headdress with horns on it. Chansley's his name, Jacob Chansley, about this allegation that people intended to do deadly violence. Your thoughts on this and how deep you think that intent runs?
Larry, good morning. And based on what I'm seeing and what we're all seeing, this definitely rises to the level of a terrorist attack. You got force and violence. You have all the components under the Code of Federal Regulations. What they were trying to do, their political motives. But also, when you start getting into things like a planned assassination, taking people hostage, this has risen to the level of irrefutable domestic terrorism. This is not just a protest that got overboard. I mean, as we talked about yesterday, they had planning. They knew exactly what they were doing. They had assuredly walked through. In fact, there's a lot of reports that they did walkthroughs. So they knew where they were going. And this was a planned, coordinated attack. And I think that's where the Justice Department is going to have to go back and look at how they want to address this, because we are getting into a different area of the law when you start talking about terrorism.
Yeah, and can you explain a bit from a law enforcement standpoint, what changes when you consider this an ongoing terroristic threat?
Well, when it's a terroristic threat, it's aimed at basically trying to intimidate or coerce the government, society, or any segment they're in, and the furtherance of political or social objectives. In this case, and of course you have to have force or violence as components as well. In this case, it's very clear that there was political intent. The intent was to use violence, and I don't know of any other way you can interpret hostage-taking, kidnapping. We go around the world with international terrorism. These are classic tools of terrorism and insurgency, and that's what this is coming out to. When I saw them walk in there and they had the zip ties, that's not something you just happen to have on you. That's something you plan well in advance, and it was very clear that they were going in there. And whereas more information will come out, it was pretty clear that they're probably going to try and take key members hostage. And for all we know, they had planned some sort of media-type event where they were going to stream what they were doing with the goal of basically changing what Congress was deciding.
We're talking with security expert Hal Kempfer. Hal, the federal watchdogs are doing a sweeping review of the FBI, the Pentagon, and other law enforcement agencies' coordination of information, what was missed in the lead-up to the attack of Wednesday of last week. It seems like there are a lot of finger pointing, of course, as you would expect after something that went this terribly awry in security preparations. But what are you making of where the breakdowns likely occurred?
Larry, in looking at it, I would say obviously the Capitol Police holds ultimate responsibility because that is their primary jurisdiction. They can point to other elements around it, DHS, the National Capital Region, Threat Intelligence Center, FBI. But at the end of the day, if you're the chief, you own that that jurisdiction where you are. With that said, yesterday it was out there was no threat assessment, and that's kind of a question I've been asking since the 6th, which is, what was the threat assessment? Was there a threat assessment? Now we know there wasn't one. Certainly DHS should have done something. It looks like they just didn't take it that seriously. I've also heard that a lot of the personnel within DHS, INA, intelligence analysis, left after last summer or were somehow separated from the government or moved elsewhere. So there was a kind of an empty shop syndrome going on there, from what I gather. The FBI obviously didn't do a threat assessment, but also I look at the Regional Intelligence Fusion Center, the NTIC, the National Capital Region Threat Intelligence Center. What were they doing? That's not quite clear yet, but they should have had a threat assessment, because these types of protests are very common to Washington, D.C., and certainly as you saw last summer and late spring with the BLM protests, it was, you know, there were threat assessments that were done on a regular basis all over the country. So the question is, why would you do that for a protest, say, in Los Angeles, but you wouldn't do it for something like this right there at the National Capitol?
So you're saying with Los Angeles-based protests, there were actual federal threat assessments going on?
I don't know for an app. Let's just say this. I have it on a fairly, let's just say, I don't want to say 100% which agency was doing what, but I can tell you this. They were looking very closely at all the protests, and that's just standard course of business is to do a threat assessment. And I would say with 99.9% certainty, and I can't say it for every single protest, but there was a threat assessment done.
Interesting. I didn't realize that the federal government did that for local events. Hal, also curious about the claim that was made, and I think it was by the head of the Capitol Police, that he sought out effort to bolster the response last Wednesday, but was turned down by congressional offices because they were concerned about the optics, how that would look with a heavily militarized security presence there. Does that ring true to you?
Well, everything I saw there, having been in the middle of some of those interesting discussions where congressional members sometimes call and try to get military assistance, what was coming out of that, they requested to the Pentagon, of course, it's the District of Columbia. There is no governor, there is no state. So with that particular National Guard, they actually respond up through the federal chain of command up to the Secretary of the Army. That was not approved. There was a lot of discussion about optics. I have to tell you that within that process, where you talk about bringing in those resources, the other discussion that happens is, do they have enough civilian forces on the ground in order to deal with that? And certainly in the Washington, D.C. area, if I was looking at it, I would say, well, you have mutual aid. You have a lot of other law enforcement agencies that could step in and bolster your forces before you go to the extraordinary step of bringing in the military. And we have always said the military is the last resort. It's not your first choice. That seems to be a moving target right now, where they've been bringing in the National Guard much quicker than what I've seen in the past. And so I think there's a little bit more to this story. It wasn't just pushback. There was probably a much more involved discussion dealing with capabilities and capacity in terms of that request.
All right. Hal Kemper joining us, a security analyst, CEO of Global Risk Intelligence and Planning. Also with us, Anna Edgerton, politics editor for Bloomberg. Anna, you have anything to add about the finger pointing and the lack of coordination between different law enforcement and security branches?
Well, one thing that we're following really closely is some allegations that the rioters had help on the inside. You know, Mickey Sherrill, who is a Democratic member of Congress, who is a former Navy pilot, has led a letter of more than 30 Democrats asking the Capitol Police and the Sergeant at Arms to investigate, I believe it was a staff member who led a large tour group in the Capitol building the day before the attack. And that's unusual in these days because visitors aren't allowed due to COVID. People who visit the Capitol have to be there on official business. So the fact that there's this very large group roaming the halls of Congress, you know, raised a lot of alarm bells. So you know, we expect to get more answers on that as the days go on. And Pelosi, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi also alluded to this in her press conference, saying that if it was found that members of Congress helped the rioters in any way, they'll be held accountable, not just in Congress, but also according to the law.
All right. We're talking with Anna Edgerton, politics editor for Bloomberg, joining us on Air Talk with the very latest on what's happening in D.C. Just want to remind you that our coverage of the inauguration of Joe Biden to become the next American president from NPR, 8 o'clock our time on Wednesday morning, right here on KPCC, scheduled to go until approximately 10 o'clock. We'll stay with NPR coverage all the way, and then I'll be joining you with Air Talk sometime likely in that 10 o'clock hour right here on KPCC. And I also wanted to ask you about that news conference by House Speaker Pelosi this morning. Anything else she had to say about timing of the impeachment going to the Senate for them to take it up in trial?
No. And of course, that's the most important question for her to answer in this process right now. She said that the House managers, the ones who will be presenting the case in the Senate, are working on their case right now, but she didn't give any indication as to when that'll actually be sent over, which of course triggers the Senate trial with implications for how quickly Biden can get his cabinet and start acting on his agenda. So, you know, we'll be following that closely, and I imagine she's probably waiting at least until Democrats get the Senate majority via the two newly elected senators from Georgia to be sworn in, Kamala Harris as vice president, and her replacement, Alex Padilla, as the next senator from California.
All right. Thank you both so much. I appreciate your being with us and talking about what's happening both in the world of politics and, of course, national security, given the attack on the U.S. Capitol and concerns about our upcoming inauguration Wednesday of next week. That's Anna Edgerton, politics editor for Bloomberg, Hal Kempfer, security analyst, joining us as well on Air Talk here on 89.3 KPECC and the KPECC app. A reminder, Film Week is coming up in about 40 minutes. We'll hear what our critics think of the new documentary MLK FBI, appropriately released for this holiday weekend. It features newly declassified files and explores the federal government's surveillance and harassment of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. MLK FBI, a new documentary. All critics will tell us about it coming up at 11 o'clock on Film Week. I'll be back with you in just 1 minute.